Welcome back, our lovely Patreon supporters.
So we were talking about, with great Dustin Cole, we're talking about Borges and Bolaño, and let's just wrap for a minute, Kevin. People who are listening to this, hopefully you listened to the most recent Bookends Reading Club meeting. Went really well, I thought. It was a lot of fun. Looking forward to the next one, Confessions of a Mask by Mishima. I haven't started reading it yet. I'm going to soon. Hopefully it shows up tomorrow. Very interesting, apparently, according to Kevin. Mishima's new for both of us. So
yeah.
We'll see what
I don't want to give anything away.
Okay, Brad. Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough,
it's very, very extraordinarily well written.
Good.
I assume a thinly veiled autofiction.
Yeah.
You're doing the Mishima episode, so you'll have to tell us more about it.
Yes.
But I'm very pleased to be reading it. And
we got a couple more episodes before we get to Mishima. We're doing Carlos Castaneda. Mm. We're doing Dante. Yeah.
Dante.
Things to look out for.
Yes, I've got my Dante literature over here. You know, I was on the bonfire because there is Art of Darkness merch. And if there's any group we should be pitching the merch to, it's this group of patrons.
That's
whom we
point.
Adore. Yeah. T-shirts, stuff like that. Yeah. You can sometimes Bonfire has like extra special products, but you have to go and like make a special request. Mm. And they don't have branded katanas or ceremonial, like the apparatus. Like should have like the Mishima suicide kit. Themed Art of Darkness themed
art.
Can you imagine what a wonderful stocking stuffer for the Art of Darkness fan?
Yeah. Oh my God!
Yeah, that episode is going to be intense.
Are
you
something else?
We're going to get Dustin. Are you Mishima pilled?
No, I haven't ever heard of him actually.
Okay,
but I'm always open to new things, right?
I don't know a whole lot about him except he's a Japanese guy, sort of a Japanese nationalist, incredibly brilliant writer, gay guy. Not that that matters that much, except it does.
His
first book is about that. But he committed seppuku. Basically went after an effort to make Japan re-imperialize, I guess.
It would be like if John Grisham today, let's not John Grisham. It would be like if we had a Don DeLillo level writer or a Cormac level writer who started his own nationalist organization, maybe 20 years from now, 10 years from now, to restore President Trump to the office, or even now, and started like a militia, and then proceeded to take over an army barracks and like commit suicide, in a very public fashion. Unthinkable. Yeah. Like there's just nothing today remotely compares to how hard this guy went.
Yeah.
And so, also a genius, like a literary.
What years was he writing? I think I might have heard of this guy actually.
Through the war.
I think he died in the 50s or the 60s.
You're going to want to watch the film. The film is one of the better films ever made. He died in 1970. He was born in 1925. So he came of age during their defeat.
It's a perfect Art of Darkness subject because he's extremely talented writer, kind of a maniac, a streak of darkness. It's perfect candidate for us to do a show on. So yes, we're all looking forward to that. But let's talk about, because I do want to give the Patreon folks what we promised in the core episode. And I want to talk about briefly and then kind of get how you get your guys' response to this. These two stories, one by Bolaño and one by Borges, that pair well, like fish and white wine or something along those lines. I don't know anything about, I don't have any culinary expertise, so I don't know what pairs with what. However, I will say
Nutella, white bread, and bananas.
Yeah, there you go. I guess. Yeah. So there's a story by Borges called The South. And what the South is Borges as character. Let me give it to you in as brief account as I can. Borges, as the character Borges, gets a head injury by ramming into a casement window, which actually did happen to the real Borges. He goes into a extended hospitalization, sort of quasi fugue state. And the idea is that he is going to leave Buenos Aires to recover. It's not clear whether he's even woken up yet or not. It's a little foggy in terms of, is this actually a very Borgesian move? Is this actually happening? Is this the dream state? Is it the afterlife? What is going on here? And the South is he's going south, which means you're sort of leaving the urban Argentine world and going into the Pampas, into the land of the gaucho.
Yeah.
The Borges character ends up getting dropped off at this train station, and he goes into a little store where some gauchos are hanging out. The gauchos throw something at him. There's a confrontation ensues, and he, and I'm leaving a lot of details out, obviously. And then the Borges character steps outside with a knife. It ends with him stepping outside with a knife, like he's going to do battle with these gauchos, right? Years later, Bolaño writes a story about a very similar kind of character named, what is his name? Bernard? Pereda. Hector Pereda, who's a lawyer and then a judge, who during the Argentine Depression leaves Buenos Aires and goes to live in the South at the ranch that has been in his family for years, though he hasn't visited since he was a child. So he goes there, and basically what happens as he's there is he gradually becomes a gaucho. He goes from being a judge to, like, now he's hunting for rabbits, and he's like riding a horse. He's like gradually transmogrifying into this gaucho figure. And he references, Pereda does, he references the story by Borges. He says, like, his life is like the story of the South. And then the judge's son, Hector Pereda, shows up. His name is Bebe. And Bebe is a stand-in for Bolaño and sort of a stand-in for Borges in a way. Because the son is a really successful writer in Buenos Aires. Okay. And he's trying to get his father to kind of come back to Buenos Aires. And then what happens, Hector Pereda ends up going back to Buenos Aires to sign some paperwork to sell his home. He's established now in the South as like a gaucho. He's an old man, but he's got this like reputation. And the Borgesian move, there's multiple here, but one of the big Borgesian moves is he has established himself as this, he's an older man, he's in his 60s, but he's established himself as this like gaucho, like almost like mafia boss kind of figure. And it's not clear how much of that is true and how much of it's just in his head. It's sort of like, you know, he goes into a store and everybody like kind of hushed tones respects him. But it's like, is that really happening? Or is he just,
that reminds me of a dude. I love that. I was thinking about this recently, where I worked at a used bookstore right near the University of Minnesota in Dinkytown back before it was totally condo-fied. It's pretty surreal what's happened down there. It used to be almost like a Haight-Ashbury kind of a vibe. Like Dylan had that song. Positively 4th Street. Yes. Pretty sure that's sort of about 4th Street down there. And it was a vibe, man. There were eccentric types that you saw. It was totally unclear why they were down there. They were usually in their 30s or their 40s. Okay. You have no business being down here by the university. You're clearly not a professor or a grad student. One dude had like, it was a white fellow, but he had like a fro, like a giant fro, and he would just walk around. They'd all wear like different Indian style clothing. Like, you don't know, is this like a, you know what I'm talking about? Like these eccentrics, like right around like in the aughts, 2000 to 2005.
There's not as many of them around.
No. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And it's all condos. And, like literally the space that this was in is now a Starbucks. Literally. Yeah. The bookstore has moved. But in any case, there was a guy who came in and he clearly was some sort of an eccentric, obviously. And he came in and he would buy his books with the Sacagawea dollars.
Oh, right.
And he carried them in a little bag, you know? And he was just clearly going through something. Like interacting with him was uncanny. Mm-hmm. He was a man out of time, like our Gaucho here.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I really love these figures, and there's not that many of them anymore. You will sometimes see them if you go to like a music fest. I was at a music festival, like a very small music festival in northern Michigan this summer. And you saw some of these people who are like, what do these people do for, you know, where do they live? It feels like they just kind of materialize out of the.
They live in vans. I think there is, and God love them. God bless him.
This is a rich American tradition of being the sort of wandering eccentric, and it'd be a shame to lose these people, I think. Whether, you know, you might disagree with them or, you know, say they're hypocrite, whatever. I love these people. Anyway, let me read this last couple paragraphs from the Bolaño story, The Insufferable Gaucho. And we're thinking about the ways for people who listened to the core episode we did on Borges and the conversation we just had with Dustin. Think about how this plays off of some of the Borges stuff we know, but is also pure Bolaño at the same time. Okay. wandering aimlessly, or so he thought, Perita ended up at the cafe where Bebe, his writer son, where Bebe used to meet his artistic and literary friends. From the street, he looked into the spacious, well-lit, bustling interior. Bebe and an old man like me, Perita thought, were presiding over one of the most animated tables. At another, closer to the window through which Perita was spying, he saw a group of writers who looked as if they worked in advertising. One of them, who had an adolescent air, although he was over 50 and maybe even over 60, kept putting a white powder up his nose and holding forth on world literature. Suddenly, the eyes of the fake adolescent met Perita's. For a moment, their gazes locked, as if for each of them, the presence of the other were a gash in the ambient reality. Resolutely and with surprising agility, the writer with the adolescent air sprang to his feet and rushed out into the street. Before Perita knew what was going on, the writer was upon him. "What are you staring at?" he demanded, brushing remnants of white powder from his nose. Perita looked him up and down. The writer was taller and slimmer and possibly stronger than he is. He was. "What are you staring at, you rude old man? What are you staring at?" The fake adolescence gang was looking on, following the scene as if something similar happened every night. Perita, our judge, realized that he had grasped his knife, then let himself go. He took a step forward and, without anyone noticing that he was armed, planted the point of the blade, though not deeply, in his opponent's groin. Later, he would remember the look of surprise on the man's face, in which terror blended with something like reproof, and the writer's words as he groped for an explanation, as if there could be an explanation for fever and nausea. "I think you need a napkin," Perita remarked, in a strong, clear voice, pointing at his adversary's bloodstained crotch. "Mother," the coquette said, looking down. When he looked up again, he was surrounded by friends and colleagues, but Perita was gone. And then I love this last paragraph, the switch he makes here. So he just stabbed this guy, maybe even killed him. "What should I do?" the lawyer wondered as he roamed through his beloved city, finding it strange and familiar, marvelous and pathetic. "Do I stay in Buenos Aires and become a champion of justice? Or go back to the Pampas, where I don't belong, and try to do something useful? I don't know, maybe something with the rabbits or the locals, those poor gauchos who accept me and put up with me and never complain." The shadows of the city declined to provide an answer. Keeping quiet, as usual, Perita thought reproachfully. But when the day began to dawn, he decided to go back. And there's a lot of stuff happening here. There's a lot of stuff about the state of urban versus rural, about this crossing the dream line to sort of recede to a past.
It goes right to Don Quixote as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Very, very, very good. Yeah. And I think Don Quixote's sort of bubbling below the surface of all literature of the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern for that matter. But interestingly, Borges' story ends with the fight about to happen and you don't know what's going to happen. You presume, and Bolaño's protagonist here also presumes, that the Borges character dies in the South. But we don't actually know that he takes the knife and he goes outside and he's going to have a fight. It's not obvious what's going to it's not stated what actually happens. In Bolaño's, his character fucking stabs the writer in the crotch. there's a violence of action there for sure, but there's also something metaphorical about this urbane successful lawyer becoming a gaucho, right, and then trying to reintegrate back into society. Very, very interesting. I really like how it appeared in the New Yorker posthumously in 2007, The Insufferable Gaucho. really, really good. Actually, reminded me of Murnane's work a bit, just in the style and the how it feels and the sort of dreaminess at the edges, kind of.
I'm looking at it right now. I just looked up The Insufferable Gaucho and The New Yorker, and it's just September 24th, 2007. Argentine lawyer becomes a gaucho.
Yeah. That's basically the story. Yeah.
I'll send you a synopsis.
Yeah. Yeah. You can imagine Bologna is like, what's it about? It's like, yeah, fuck. Yeah. There's a guy who does a thing.
Let's read it. Fun.
Dustin, this makes me think, like, you know, clearly you're in your element writing the book. What do you, it's just because Kevin said that, it made me think of this. Like, did you, for instance, did you write the back copy? And a secondary kind of follow-up question, how do you feel about the whole, like, trying to promote it business?
I wrote the back copy. And it's sort of just a pared down version of the query letter when I was querying the book. And then, you know, your question about promoting, I'm not like a big self-promoter. You might like, I don't mind it, but I'm not like a, I don't know. Some people seem more comfortable with it than I do. And like, you know, to be sure, this is an interesting point I should make, which maybe fits into our discussion about like imaginary personages, I guess. But like, I never really intended to be like an indie lit darling or something, you know, like I always saw myself as a professional novelist. Like that's what I want to do for a living, even though that's like, sounds crazy and it's probably impossible. That's a dream I hold on to, just like you hold on to the dream of the book itself. You know, like if you hold on to it, you'll finish it.
Right.
It's an act of faith.
Yeah.
Novel writing is pure faith.
It is. Yeah. Y'all are also insane.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy.
The only crazier artist is a filmmaker, in my view. I think that like filmmakers are actually fucking crazy. Like,
kind of.
But there's a whole thing. Like, you have to be to be a good filmmaker, you have to be like a leader and like a business owner and like there's all these other things that don't clearly relate to the art of making it that you have to be able to do. You know, which for a novelist. Like, it's weird. We spend our thing writing a book years in your case, and in most cases years trying to make this thing right. And then the next move is like, why don't you just talk to people about it a lot? And you're like, I don't even know how to make, like, hitting that switch is hard. It's tricky. You're like, trained yourself to be as introverted as possible to like focus on this thing. And then now all of a sudden you're supposed
Know who does it in a really, really elegant and sophisticated way?
Dan Baltic,
the great Dan Baltic,
the nut man himself.
I hope to go on New Right. I sent him a book too. I hope to go on that one if he likes the book, maybe.
He's great. Those guys are so funny. It's promoting a book like Nutcracker's a little different.
It is.
So like, I don't think that I read this. I haven't read Nutcracker, but there are some slight similarities. Like, because there's a character in my book who's best friends with Ward Brown. His name is Ross, and he's like a Q guy. Like, he's into Q, and like he likes Trump and stuff.
Right.
And like, it's right around the time when the Trump team is, so this is set in Canada, but like still Canada, we feed off of like parasites, American political, news.
I thought that was interesting. Reading.
So this is right around, Canada, this is right around the time when the Trump team is, disputing the results of the election.
Right.
It's pretty interesting, you know, like actually, like that's kind of a Borgesian thing that those Trumpers did mm-hmm. when they're like trying to go through, you know, the what do you call it, like the chain of custody and stuff with the yeah. mail-in voting and all that, you know, like
yeah.
so that's like part of, that's just a little fragment of the story, you know, like yeah. that's just kind of floating around.
It's context there. It's happening in that context. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. But like with promoting the book or promoting a book, you're to answer your question, I think that like, even though you are having to change, like, you know, like oscillate consciousness, mm-hmm. you should be able to like talk about your book comfortably. You mm-hmm. worked on it for however how long, you know?
Right.
And then what I like about your guys's format is you can kind of fold it into the canon in a sense, you know, yeah. like even though that, you know, I don't belong in the canon or I'm not in the canon, you know, like we still are authors are still functioning within that literary history.
Yeah, that is something we've deliberately tried to do, is say, like, this for is sure. a tradition that is ongoing, and here are some of sure. the people who are participating in it, including us.
That's why I like your guys' format, and I like, yeah. this has been great. This has been yeah. a great experience. It makes it more holistic and like, what's the word? Like, there's just more of a natural
yeah,
conversation organic, yeah. about literature rather than a contrived promotion of a product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah. I think
I'm not really interested in doing.
Right. And one of the problems, and I've been on a lot of shows talking about my book, and there's a tendency to what happens is the questions are, what's the book about? What was it like to write it? Where did the idea come from? Who are you influenced by? Oh, we're out of time. And it's sort yeah. of, you can have interesting conversations in there, but you're, to your point, for me, what's more interesting is like, all right, but you're a writer. You think about, you have ideas about other stuff, and let's get a little broader conversation kind of that ties into what we're doing creatively, but is about other things as well.
Any podcast that doesn't bring up Werner Herzog at some point along the way, that's a dud for me. So I'm very pleased that you brought up.
It's not a podcast.
It's not a podcast right. unless we bring up. Yeah, that might be a season 4 bingo card. We got to find yeah. a way to jam Werner into every episode. But truly one of my favorite artists
Same.
Of all time.
Absolutely.
Absolutely brilliant. Apparently mm-hmm. there's an Errol Morris documentary I'm not familiar with. This one about the electric chair guy.
I've never seen it, but I'm aware of it. Yeah.
I did not know that. I'm a big, I like Errol Morris. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like Errol Morris is like, you're talking about narrators and artistic voices and things. And Werner Herzog and Errol Morris fit into that conversation. Right, because Werner Herzog narrates a lot of his documentaries, and there isn't that conceit that it's mm-hmm. it's
objective. There's no pretense toward objectivity. No, I loved when he narrated Where's Waldo? Are you familiar with that?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. No, there's a satirical video on YouTube where it's like Werner Herzog narrates where's Waldo? Where is Waldo and why must we seek him? Ah, we are on the beach looking for Waldo. The beach, of course, sing, oh, there he is. I found.
Awesome.
But it's a satirical video. It's freaking hilarious. He also, like, there's one where it's like Werner Herzog narrates, you know, Matilda, narrates Clifford the Red Dog. In any case, one of my very favorites. Absolutely. Yeah. I will, like, if I had no other collection of movies to take with me to a desert mm-hmm. island, if you told me, like, a director, I'd probably have to pick him.
Oh yeah.
Now that I think about it. I mean, he's such a wide range. You've got documentaries, you've got feature films, you got Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans in there.
Yeah.
Right next to The Enigma of Caspar Hauser. And in any case, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let's I suppose we can wrap this up. Dustin, unless you've got anything else that you want to say or talk about.
I can talk about anything. I could talk for hours with you guys, like, honestly.
Well, maybe what we'll do is, maybe what we can do is a few months down the road, we figure out another way to get you back on, talk about another one of our subjects. I'm sure we've got some more overlaps in taste and subjects we'll cover that we've either already covered or we're going to cover that you're interested in. So let's
open door, man.
Pull that in. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. So fun. And congratulations. Yeah, go ahead, Dustin.
I guess maybe we didn't really talk about Bolaño too much.
Yeah.
And I guess what I would like, I could say about Bolaño that is really interesting is that he kind of took the literary world by storm, right? And basically posthuman, in terms of English speaking, in the English speaking world, it was posthumously.
Mm-hmm.
And, I devoured his books, those that were available around that time in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Or the late, towards 2010.
Yeah,
and me too. I finished them and I had wondered, I had recommended the books and, I kind of had thought about the books. They were indelible to me, but I couldn't really figure out what delighted me about them. I was that's really weird. That's very, very strange that you can devour a person's corpus basically and not really be able to explain why you were delighted by the work.
Yeah.
And so then I went back and I read those little novels that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think what I came to realize about him, there's a few little things and one of them is his strange lyricism or his equivocal language is very different from anything else. A simile or a metaphor of Bolaño is one of a kind, and it's strange, weird. He's a weird writer. The gash, you're reading the Gaucho story, and at the end, he uses this image of a gash in the... What was the phrasing? Gash in the...
Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, the deeply into his opponent's groin. Let me see if I can find it. Hold on. The presence of the for a moment their gaze is locked as if for each of them the presence of the other were a gash in the ambient reality. And that was before he stabbed him, right? So there's like this very subtle, not so subtle, but an unusual kind of foreshadowing, right?
And so he's constantly doing that in his stories. We're talking a bit through the DMs about how these Borges and Bolaño and even me, I don't consider myself a great poet. I have my moments maybe, but these poets that turn to fiction.
Yeah.
And throughout their fiction, throughout their narratives, they bring it in and out of poetry in these really, Borges too, in these very kind of subtle but strange original ways that aren't like anything else. And it gives you this feel when you're reading it. You're reading a story and then they bring it into poetry.
Yeah, and it's that
you're almost questioning you question not only your own reality, how could I even be reading this? This is amazing. But then you question the reality that's being represented in the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It takes on different tones and things.
Yeah.
Like, so they're very poetic. Borges is very tonal. He's a tonal writer. It's hard to really pinpoint what he's all about, but there's always this tone, kind of dark, kind of sinister, kind of weird.
Yeah.
And it threads through all of his work, I think.
100%.
And I just wanted to kind of bring that up because it's very rarely that you can not pinpoint what it is that delights you about a writer.
You're talking about Bolaño. Bolaño has the right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bolaño, to a certain extent, Borges too, but not Bolaño.
Yeah.
Right. Bolaño has that sinister menace. There's a quality of menace. Which I think may frankly stem out of his, to a degree, out of his, he's a poet first.
Yeah.
He's a poet. And obviously, but I think the feeling of menace might stem out of his anxiety about the form of the novel itself.
Possibly, and that's a good point. I never ever thought of that.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that for sure.
He felt like he was slumming it in the novel,
right?
And he did some abuse to the novel. I mean, 2666 is
He rode the novel hard. Yeah, he slapped it around quite a bit. It's true.
He did.
Speaking of 2666, the part about Arcimboldi just soars. That's like one of my favorite texts ever.
Mm-hmm.
Just the last part. The part about Arcimboldi is amazing.
I got to revisit this. Yeah.
It's right after the part about the crimes, right? And you're talking about like him riding the novel hard. That part about the crimes is difficult.
Oh, yeah.
It's arduous, right? It's just like one murder after another, right? And these young girls working at these maquiladoras in Juarez or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. And like, and then you get to the part about Arcimboldi, and it's just utterly breathtaking. That part, I couldn't believe it when I read it.
I gotta go back to this, because I think I read it. I read 2666 when it was in hard, like it wasn't even in paperback yet. You couldn't get it in paperback. I remember, and so it's been a while. I mean, what was that? 2007, 2008,
something like that. Poor innocent times.
Yeah, it's a while ago for me. It feels like a century ago.
It really does, Dustin. Tremendous.
Yes,
I really enjoyed this. Open door policy. Congratulations with the novel. Thanks. Hope you have a great time promoting it.
Yeah.
And
I'd like to hear what you guys think of it after you read the whole thing.
Sure. Yeah. I'll definitely send out some tweets for sure as I'm going along here. Yeah, and you should be very proud of it. It's definitely, so far I'm totally on board with it. So
how far along are you on it? Like,
I think 80 pages, 90 pages, somewhere right in there. Yeah.
Well, like, okay. So it's kind of like a Dostoevsky novel. Like it just sort of like, it takes about 100 pages to click.
Well, I can see that we're burning. We're smoldering right now. And all the pieces are coming on the table, and it's,
yeah,
as I said, in a tweet, is I feel like I'm in. I feel like you know where we're going, even though I don't. So,
yeah,
I like that experience as a reader.
I'm kind of old fashioned that way too. You know, like I like to set the stage. Mm-hmm. You know, like in media res thing for me. I don't know. I like it, but I feel like it's artificial almost. Like.
It definitely can be. It's a little bit more of a slightly more of a cinematic technique, I think. And everybody thinks they're supposed to be writing movies now. So it kind of.
Yeah. Everybody is writing movies unless they're consciously not writing movies.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
Dustin, thank you very
sorry
much.
Sorry to keep you guys.
No, not at all, man.
No,
this is great.
No. This is a real joy. Tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to go see part two of the Metallica Live.
Oh, that's right.
Streaming from Dallas, Texas. My teenage daughter dyed her hair black. She's into Metallica.
Nice.
I'm going to go. It's actually pretty cool. Night one, they opened with Creeping Death. Which was, that was a strong choice.
That's an old one. Isn't that off of like,
That's like, is that off Ride the Lightning?
I think that's off of Ride the Lightning.
It's an old one.
Yeah.
Oldie but a goodie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they closed with, it's off Ride the Lightning.
That's back when they were still good.
Hey. We still got it.